Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today, we're delving into the world of money laundering, a global challenge that sees up to $2 trillion laundered each year, according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. Joining me today is Amber Goodrich, compliance analyst at CSI, and Kevin Libby, analyst of fraud and security at Javelin Strategy and Research. From the evolving landscape of the Bank Secrecy Act and anti-money laundering regulations to the current state of affairs, they're going to explore the implications for financial institutions and the need for modernization, particularly since outdated systems and manual processes are just some of the nitty-gritty challenges that FIs encounter daily. But fear not, because Amber and Kevin will explore how organizations can take proactive steps. From evaluating programs and systems to preparing for new regulations, they're going to talk through strategies to combat new and existing crime tactics. Think of it as a roadmap for your organization to stay ahead in the fight against money laundering. Amber, to start things off, can you walk us through what's impacting the fight against money laundering?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, things have changed quite a bit since the initial money laundering rules and regulations were put into place, and even obviously since money laundering's inception back in the day. We're looking at huge dollar amounts right now of crimes that are being committed and money that's being laundered throughout the world. Even some of the figures that I've seen most recently, I think were in the trillions, maybe 5 trillion, I think was one of the figures I saw for back in 2022. So just the sheer dollar amount of things that are kind of transpiring is obviously impacting things. Things are very lucrative, obviously, for money laundering professionals. We're even seeing professional groups that are being established just to launder money specifically. And that's stemming from a lot of things. I think obviously, the way that we do things now, even since the pandemic happened a few years back, has changed greatly. Things are vastly digital at this point. Obviously, we're exchanging money in different ways than we ever did before. A lot of things are contactless. You don't know who you're doing business with. We're seeing various different types of currency coming into play. Lots of things like that. Kevin, do you have thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, I love everything you mentioned. I think even just what you said about the volumes increasing alone presents a very big problem for financial institutions trying to get their head around money laundering and trying to interrupt it as much as possible. What you mentioned as far as the professional organizations being hired, I think that presents a unique problem as well, just from the standpoint that identifying those connections between parties that might have an association with a money launderer or maybe somebody on an OFAC list or something like that, I think it becomes harder to make those connections when you're introducing so many more players into the field. And when you're dealing with professional accountants or lawyers, people like that, who are often hired into these organizations with the purpose of more effectively laundering the money, I think that further complicates things.
Oh, absolutely. They're bringing in legitimate individuals to kind of help aid in this process. And they, most of them likely don't even know, you know, that that's what's going on. So
exactly. Yeah.
For sure. Definitely makes it hard to identify and, you know, kind of to tag along with that. Obviously, the resources that institutions have to kind of fight and combat against this, you know, the money to put towards things that we need, like technology and people to help identify this, it's not there, right? We're always being told to do more with less. So yeah, that's definitely a huge issue as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the budgets are paramount to the conversation, especially since, and reasonably so, but regulators don't consider budgetary constraints legitimate reasons for not meeting requirements and complying, right? So yeah, I couldn't agree more. Increased volume, outdated monitoring tools, limited staffing, all of that factors in and all of that costs money. So that's a big part of the picture, I think.
And what you said about the regulators is the huge point. And that kind of ties into what I wanted to talk about next a little bit, was kind of how things are evolving and how the regulators, they don't care if you have the resources or not. And we're seeing new regulation that's coming out in this arena, which we haven't seen really since, I think, 2018 was when we saw the last kind of major thing with like the CDD rules that came out. We haven't seen much in the BSA and AML space since then until that AML Act of 2020 came out, which kind of sounds old at this point. We're in 2023, but things haven't been finalized yet, right? We're still seeing things that are being rolled out at this point and new rules that are coming. There's, you know, increased penalties that are in there. They're kind of cracking down on violations just as a whole. There are new definitions in there for egregious violations and repeat offenders and things like that, that they're really keying in on at this point, that we haven't seen a ton of up until this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. And as far as what you mentioned, the repeat offenders and the egregious offenders, which is a pretty vague term, right? They haven't done much to define what that would be. Although I think if we all think back to early 2000s and 2010s, we can certainly identify a couple of parties that would probably fit into that category. But with those definitions come increased penalties, right? I know that they're talking about having multipliers for folks who have repeat offenses, right? And that's, again, whether it's intentional or unintentional, and with the sheer volume of transactions taking place, with being able to use social media to recruit money mules that have never been involved in the practice before. So there's no prior data to use to identify them as potential money laundering parties. All of those things complicate the process and make it harder for financial institutions to meet those regulations at all, let alone not have repeat problems if they're getting behind on alerts or they're having trouble making those connections or something like that. And I think, too, you mentioned the idea of evolving. A lot has changed in the space, but some things have also remained static. For example, the currency limits have been the same since 1970, right? And that's going to create a lot of false positives and a lot of alerts for financial institutions to go through, a lot of structuring-related SARs that need to be sent. So all of that adds up. All of that makes it more difficult to remain compliant with these regulations. And as we've said a number of times to regulators, they're not looking for excuses, they're looking for results. So
exactly. Yeah. And that's what you said about the limit is a great point. That's something that I hear from our financial institutions that we deal with a lot, is just how hard it is to keep up with the amount of reporting that they have to do based on the limits the way that they are right now. And that is a piece of the AML Act of 2020 that they're looking into. But again, it's one of those things that hasn't been finalized yet. So we're still kind of in a holding pattern to see if what they propose is even going to be helpful. Maybe it's going to complicate things even further. We don't know yet. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's one of those things.
Can you speak to some of the challenges that financial institutions are facing when it comes to, you know, these growing pains that both you and Kevin mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that kind of tags right into what we were talking about. So obviously, we don't have a ton that has been defined out of this AML Act yet. The thing that we've seen the most guidance and regulations that have come out around is the beneficial ownership piece that's set to go into effect early next year. But even that in and of itself, there's still a lot that hasn't been defined yet. We don't have the database that FinCEN is supposed to be creating to register these businesses. We don't know who's going to have access to that, if financial institutions are even going to be able to use that the way that we think they probably will. So there's just still a lot of unknown at this point. The other thing kind of with that act is there's a lot that is said in there. There's a lot that's implied in there, I guess, is how I want to put that. Things that are referenced over and over and over again. Modernization is a term that they use a ton in there. And technology as a whole is referenced in there a lot as well. But it's not defined on what they want us to do with that. They don't necessarily come out and say, you need to go out and invest in new software systems, or you need to completely overhaul your policies and procedures to make sure that you're kind of up to date on these things. But it's implied. So could we see that coming? Absolutely. So I think that obviously kind of makes things challenging. What we talked about with the fines and the violations, obviously the compliance risk that comes along with this, they're really cracking down. And we're also seeing some violations and things that have already come out recently where there's multiple regulatory agencies that are tagging in on these. So you've got a compliance program deficiency that's cited by FinCEN, that's also cited by OFAC and the Department of Treasury because it's related to your sanctions program. So they're kind of both tagging in there. So that really increases the risk that organizations are facing as well, which obviously further complicates things. And then, you know, there's risk of criminal violations that come along with it as well. And that's nothing new. Obviously, that's always been kind of a risk that BSA and AML officers have had. You know, if there's something that they're cited for that they are held responsible for, there can be criminal violations for them individually that come along with it. But as Kevin stated earlier, there's going to be more of that just with kind of the crackdown, especially with the willfulness and the egregious terms that they like to throw out in there.
Again, I agree with everything you said. I think some of those growing pains are coming from the provisions of the Act itself, the Anti-Money Laundering Act of 2020. And then some of it is coming from changes in just transactions themselves and how money laundering is taking place. I think what Amber mentioned about the modernizing aspect is very important for financial institutions to consider right now, because that's actually been kind of a growing pain, even absent these provisions. I think if you talk to anybody in the industry, most financial institutions would be very happy to have the latest state-of-the-art modern technology that would use machine learning, artificial intelligence, things of that nature to adapt their rules on the fly in order to more effectively recognize emerging trends in money laundering, to more effectively make connections between pass-through accounts and things like that. But budgetary concerns are an issue. And I think a positive, potentially, the recent regulatory moves could be that it's maybe that activation energy that those institutions need to get over the hump and invest in those programs and invest in that technology in order to modernize and do what the provision is, as Amber kind of suggested, kind of what it's saying with a wink and a nudge, but not actually directly saying, right, that you need to invest in these new technologies. I think that could go a long way to streamlining processes, even just things like automatic filing of SARs that are structuring related. I think that something like 40% of SARs are believed to be structuring sorts of issues. And machine learning, AI, automated systems could go a long way to cutting down on the burden that that type of reporting creates for institutions. So certainly there are some pains involved in that, but also some opportunities, I think. And I think it's important that financial institutions focus on that latter aspect, because they're going to be required to comply with these provisions, whether it's painful or not. So they need to focus on what they can do and look for those opportunities, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I absolutely would agree with that. When I sat in a compliance officer seat in a financial institution, guidance like this was absolutely the ammo that we needed in our pocket to take up to the board and say, hey, this is kind of what's going on. This is what we need to do. And the AML Act, to kind of expand on that a little bit further, it talks a lot about the new ways that we're seeing these crimes committed. It talks about new sectors. Cryptocurrency is referenced in there, which is an area that we haven't seen a ton of regulation around. It's an area of huge risk, even to our financial institutions, you know, that may not necessarily think they're doing business in that arena. Some of them might be, and they don't know it yet. So there's a lot of good ammo, I guess, is what I'll call it, in that act to, you know, really kind of use to help beef up programs and things like that. So that's a great point, Kevin.
It comes in, and kind of want to pose one final question both your ways. Amber, how can organizations take steps to combat new and existing criminal tactics? And, you know, I'm sure that they're asking, like, what to do now. Do you have any best practices that you can offer?
For sure. Yeah. To tie on to kind of what we were just talking about, review that AML Act is really where I would start. Make sure that you're familiar with it and that you have started taking a look at your own programs and practices. I like to tell people to kind of take it back to the basics sometimes and go back and refresh yourself on, you know, the pillars of AML compliance and make sure that you've got your programs where they need to be even before these regulations go into effect. And then you can really kind of determine from there how things need to change from that. And with that, as you're considering things that need to be changed, think about whether or not you might need one of those cool new software solutions like Kevin was talking about. We have a lot of those out there. My organization does have a AML solution as well that does offer artificial intelligence and machine learning as a part of it. And that's huge because old systems for AML and transaction monitoring and things like that, they're not enough anymore. Everything is more complicated now. Everything is digital now. You can't really rely on those kind of rules-based systems anymore. You need systems that have smarter types of alerts that are going to be able to look at past behaviors that your customers have and really kind of compare that and see where the changes are happening for you without having to go through and manually review reports and create spreadsheets and things like that. Automated SAR filing, like Kevin talked about, that's another huge piece of this, especially because we haven't seen changes to those SAR limits or expectations to this point. So being able to automate that piece of it is huge and takes some burden off of institutions for sure. And then another huge piece of that is being able to kind of bring in all of your data and get a holistic picture of that. So you have customers that maybe doing business kind of outside your organization or with a partner that you're working with, and you may not be able to see all of that in one nice spot. But if you get with a solution that offers API technology that can kind of bring that in for you and really give you a whole picture of who your customer is doing business with and who they really are, that really kind of helps to understand the risk that your organization is facing from those types of customers. And our solution, obviously, it offers all of those things, or I wouldn't be talking about them. But we also offer risk scoring and things like that to kind of help you decide how risky your customers are. And I know when I was in that seat before and kind of handling these things for the organization that I worked for, that was an area we really struggled. How do you decide who is a high-risk customer, a low-risk customer, a medium-risk customer, especially when you're working with kind of limited data, if you're not able to see kind of that whole picture? So those are kind of the areas that I would start with. Kevin, do you have anything to add to that?
I think that's a pretty exhaustive list. I do agree. I do agree definitely that data integration is a huge part of it, both from the standpoint of being able to effectively identify money laundering activities, both those that follow current trends and those that might emerge in the future. Data is everything in that regard. And the more seamless integration you have across your own organization, and as you mentioned as well, with other vendors or other organizations that you might tie into, I think that goes a long way to closing gaps and really making some headway with anti-money laundering activities. I would mention too that as far as what businesses can be doing now, what financial institutions can be doing now, I think that they need to be having the arguments about how they're going to meet that call to modernization. They need to be having those conversations now, because it takes time for budgets to get set and it takes time to make room in those budgets. And that's not even counting finding the right vendor or discussing how that's going to integrate into your current systems. But I think that that's an important thing, is start the process. Don't wait until these regulations are so finely defined that they have a hard start date and you end up finding that you're behind the curve on that. The only other thing I would say is, in terms of what kind of solutions you're looking for, Amber mentioned several of the key features of the products that they provide, and they sound very good. I think that artificial intelligence and machine learning have to be components of anti-money laundering technology going forward. And I think a major reason for that is simply the sheer number of parameters that can be tested and the interaction between those parameters that can be teased out by a computer system. I think it's far more efficient and far more effective than even if you have the best trained, most knowledgeable money laundering experts trying to create these algorithms and these rules on their own, on the fly, based on what they've seen so far. Like Amber suggested, I think that the days of static rules-based systems are on their way out. I think that machine learning, artificial intelligence, assisted technology really does need to be a part of this equation going forward.
Yeah, it's far easier for those systems to, you know, pull out anomalies in behavior than it is for, you know, somebody looking at a set of reports from the past several months. And it just, you know, like you said, it being able to bring it all in, give you kind of that holistic picture, I really think that that's obviously where we have to be headed with how things have been changing and evolving. So,
yeah, I agree.
Thank you both so much for sharing your insights and perspective. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.